Honey, I'm going out. I'll be back in a couple hours.
You play Farmville and call yourself a gamer.
You said awesome, and I said I hate it.
Okay, so here we go. This is where the extended knowledge comes in.
Don't mind me. I'm just staring at a wall somewhere.
Can anyone afford Benedict Cumberbatch?
That's surprising.
I don't think a human could make those sounds.
Yeah, well, you can do it, though, can't you?
Yeah, okay.
Hi, I'm Dean.
And I'm Paul.
And I'm Jason. Welcome to Nerds Before Birds, the podcast where you'll find reviews, rankings, and general discussion on all things pop culture. This week, we're going to have a look at the film Upgrade, the film directed by Lee Whannell, the co-creator of the Saw franchise, along with Insidious and other horror titles.
I didn't know that.
This So this pulpy action sci-fi that shares many of the beats of the Tom Hardy Venom movie, but for a fraction of the price. So we're going to have a look at how they compare.
Yeah.
And we're also going to look just in detail with this. So we will be going almost straight into spoiler territory after we get our initial reviews out of the way. In this film, we follow the character of Gray Trace, played by Logan Marshall Green, a car restoration mechanic, after a brutal attack that leaves his wife dead and Gray a quadriplegic. A recent client offers a second chance at life in the form of an experimental computer chip called STEM. With the help of the artificial intelligence, he regains the use of his limbs and begins the hunt for his killer.
Well, the killers. They're related. Yeah. They're
his
proxy.
Wife's killers. I left out a word there.
His family's killers. There you go.
Yeah.
Got your back, man.
On the hunt for tickets to the killers.
What did you guys think of this movie? Did it soar like an eagle or did it flip the bird? Dean, what did you think of this movie?
I actually really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was awesome. One of those, I think it's just my kind of taste in movies. Like I kind of compared it to Equilibrium and like low budget sci-fi films that I just absolutely love.
Yeah.
And I think it definitely soars like an eagle for me.
Yeah,
definitely.
That's cool.
Yeah.
What about you, Paul? What did you think?
I loved it. I thought it was awesome. It was like everything I wanted Venom to be and more.
Mm-hmm.
Soared like an eagle only to get like brutally blown apart by an upgraded human. It's sick.
Yeah. I really feel like this was the perfect movie to follow up Venom from last week for.
Yeah.
Because it is so similar in so many ways, and we'll go through the differences and some of the similarities soon. Mm-hmm. I really like this movie too. I thought it soars like an eagle. Maybe not like a massively high on the scale of soaring, but it's very
like a young
enjoyable.
Rookie eagle.
Kind of young, yeah.
Trying to make it big.
They're having
in
their
the world.
First crack. Yeah. Having a fly.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But from the opening title sequence, when it had like the autumn, like the augmented robotic voice reading the logos.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, this is going to be awesome, this movie. Because that I'd never seen that done before. And it was something just so simple, but kind of just made sense, and it really set you up for what the movie was going to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated that as a launching pad into the movie. And I felt like all the use of practical effects and things like that really worked well for this movie. Like all that really visceral, violent kind of feeling to it. But yeah, we've got obvious comparisons between Tom Hardy and Logan Marshall Green, because those guys look like they're brothers.
Twins.
Or like they're so,
budget Tom Hardy.
Yeah, budget Tom Hardy. And he's definitely budget Tom Hardy, but I mean, like he has been around the block a bit. Like, I mean, he's been in Prometheus and Spider-Man Homecoming, and like he's not like in Homecoming. He's the unfortunate recipient of the death ray by Michael Keaton.
Easier way to describe him. He's the guy that dies first in all those movies. There you go, Paul.
That's actually really true, because he does die first in Prometheus. No, he doesn't die first. He's not quite first in Prometheus.
Not quite.
But
second.
He's pretty early on. Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at his IMDb profile, and he's in actually a few episodes of 24. So He can't die first.
No, look at him go.
He's only in like 7, so I'm guessing he dies at some point.
Yeah, yeah, probably.
He dies in the 7th hour of 24 hours. That's
but
pretty
what
early.
Do you guys think of him in comparison to Tom Hardy? Like, did you like him in this? Like, Dean, what did you think of him?
I actually, okay, he kind of in this changed my opinion a bit because comparing the two, and you always do compare the two, Tom Hardy.
Because they look so because similar.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. And like, you know, people tend to just get them mixed up and think that Tom Hardy's in more movies than he actually is. But Tom Hardy, yeah. I think, is pretty, you know, like widely considered to be the one that has more charisma, like on screen kind of presence.
Yeah.
But in this movie, like right from the very first scene, which is probably one of my favorite moments in the whole film, like when he's just working on the car, it's just him in the shed, turns on the car, is like,
I love you.
I love you.
Yep.
And I was like, yes. Oh, this is like, yeah. This guy's awesome. This is such a cool character. Such like, he did a really, really awesome job at this. And he definitely made me think, man, in a couple of years, maybe we'll be putting Logan Marshall Green up on a, like, you know, a higher kind of
pedestal
degree of actor. Yeah, yeah. Pedestal than Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
Because he's really good.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, he was great.
I agree.
What about you, Paul? What did you think?
Well, look, I've never been too hard in the Tom Hardy camp. He's okay. He hasn't really done anything that has been like, wow, that was amazing. He is amazing.
Yeah.
Freaking Logan Marshall Green, like you said, then straight away, I'm like, I like this guy. He plays his charisma in this movie, I buy way more than Tom Hardy's charisma and general attitude in Venom. Like, I can see him as this personality and, you know, just like I hate computers. You know, I'm a little bit rough around the edges, but I'm genuinely a nice guy who's a little bit kooky and 100% I buy it. I like it. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with Dean. I would not be surprised if in the next couple of years he is a much bigger actor than he is at this current stage.
I honestly can't see him getting as big as Tom Hardy. I personally, like you guys know, and I said this, I think, last week, I love Tom Hardy. I think he's fantastic in nearly everything I've seen him in. And, but watching this, I was able to sort of separate the two in my mind because I really did like Logan Marshall Green in Prometheus. I thought he did a fantastic job in that, and he really played that whole that character really well. And as he sort of gets into the really sick state, as he's being like and taken over by the parasite that's inside of him, he does like a really great job in that. And in this, what I found was fascinating was in the fight scenes where he does that thing with his head where his arms and body move like independent of his head.
Oh, and it just stays perfectly straight. Unbelievable. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe that is one of the key things. Logan Marshall Green is the more impressive physical actor. Like the way he controls his movements in this film and in Prometheus when he's doing all like, you know, that transformation stuff. It's just really, really impressive.
Yeah.
So we're like, you know.
Like are we going into spoilers? Are we diving straight in?
We will go very quickly into spoilers. Mm-hmm. Like we've all said that it soars like an eagle. There's a few more points I'd like to quickly cover over, but but we can get into those soon. With Logan Marshall Green, I feel like he's good at the physical aspects of a character. I really still like Tom Hardy's like overall character performances in his various roles, like even Bane, that kind of transformation of him as a person almost. You can sort of look past. And it sort of, I think it does put him on a little bit more of a different level to Logan Marshall, but not much. I could definitely see him getting like bigger, but I don't know whether he'll ever make it to Tom Hardy levels, if that makes sense.
I feel like, Logan Marshall Green, he just must have missed out on that one role. Yeah. And it's like, whichever one of these guys would have got that role first, that's the name we know. Like, I totally get what you mean. Yeah, it's like, he can't get to that level because they've kind of already got, they've already got him.
A person that looks like that, yeah.
So he's, there's a high chance he'll be stuck doing like semi-lower movies. But I mean, as this movie shows, that's not a bad thing. If anything,
yeah, that's true. And it, I think he's kind of like Jesse Plemons, like the guy that looks almost the spitting image of Matt Damon. But I feel like he'll never get to Matt Damon status because he looks like Jesse. Like, well, he is Jesse Plemons. He looks exactly like Jesse Plemons. But he looks so much like Matt Damon, and they always get confused. But he's like the budget discount Matt Damon. So yeah, like if you've ever seen him in anything, like he's a fantastic actor.
What's he in?
But he'll always be compared to Matt Damon. So he's out of Black Mirror and Fargo season 2.
Oh, that guy. Breaking Bad.
Yeah, and he's also in Breaking Bad as well.
Yeah, who's he in Breaking Bad?
Yeah, he's in the final season of Breaking Bad. He's
didn't make it that far.
I got to season 4.
Why not?
You didn't make it?
I hate his wife. No. I can't do it. She annoys the crap out of me.
See, I don't get that complaint. So he's like a psychopath, but people hated his wife. And she's like literally doing everything she can to live with this guy that's just a horrendous human being. And
she's annoying.
She's just making
I just want to see a guy make drugs. I don't want like.
Yeah.
How are you?
Fair enough.
Oh, I'm fine. It's like, oh. Yeah.
She was making too many good decisions. I couldn't relate to her. Just.
I'm not responsible. I don't want to watch this.
Jesse Plemons actually plays a character called Todd in the final season of Breaking Bad, and he's kind of one of the more sadistic characters, and he's kind of really scary. When you see him, he's sort of really cold and almost a psychopath the way that he does things. And it's really well done. And then in Black Mirror, he has a really good episode in Black Mirror. If you ever watch the episode, the USS Callister, which is, I think it's the first episode in season 5. And Black Mirror is a anthology series. So each episode is actually individual different. And you could go and watch any episode and it won't spoil any other episode kind of thing because it's all a contained storyline. So that one, USS Callister, is based on Star Trek and it's almost like a spin-off of Star Trek where he plugs into a virtual reality where he's in charge of a Starship Enterprise kind of
cool
situation. Yeah, it's really, really well done, but it's in kind of like a semi-horror kind of way. So, like, it's pretty good. I think you'd enjoy it, Paul, even though you don't like horror movies and
that's
stuff.
True.
It's not really in the way in... It's kind of like in a disturbing technology kind of way, not a, like, you'll forever feel scared kind of thing. But anyways, getting back to
and yeah, it's good, but it's intense. You need to pace yourself out. That's what I found. Anyway,
what did you guys think of Melanie Vallée? So she is the wife.
Is this spoiler territory?
Because no, well, I suppose it's all in the I've already said that she dies, so everyone already knows that she dies. It's act like in the log line or whatever.
I thought he got STEM just to be a better husband. Buy her flowers.
Yeah. But what did you guys think of her in that?
I liked her.
Yeah. Have you seen her in anything else?
Yes, I have. She was in an Australian show called Winners and Losers.
Oh, yes. Winners and Losers.
Fun fact on that, and as I was looking through IMDb, the voice actor who did STEM is also Australian, who also worked on Winners and Losers. Or was in it or something. I don't know.
So Winners and Losers is one of those guilty pleasures that my wife likes. And she made me watch all of the first four seasons.
Probably made him watch like 2 episodes and then he watched the rest of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I reckon yeah, Jason, I you got your wife own. Into Winners and Losers. That's what happened.
Yeah, I totally did.
As an example, he's like, see, sweetie, see how bad it could be? You're lucky.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so, and you know what else she was on? So, she was also the blue Power Ranger.
Yeah,
so
dude.
I was
Power
a
Ranger's
little bit
mystic.
Disappointed that.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So she could have been like, you know, she could have got out of the car when it crashed and been like, magical source, mystic right. force, and like taken out some yes. of those bad guys kind of thing. Like, and become the blue Power Ranger. Power and it could have like.
Waste yeah, dudes.
Like. Yeah, exactly. And she would have been the actual upgrade.
Blue Ranger.
Yeah.
That's the crossover we want.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, that would have been amazing. But yeah, so let's look at some of the other characters in this. And we will go into spoilers now. So if you're still here and you know you haven't seen this movie and you want to go watch this movie, go watch it. But now we're going to go into spoilers, so we will probably ruin it for you if you haven't seen it already. So get out now.
It's worth the money to rent or buy, especially because. Like, whilst the production company's not, you know, I think I was reading their budget was, the articles I've read were a bit spotty. They were like, the budgets for these films are usually $3 to $5 million. Not because they want to. That's just what they can recoup if they don't do a wide release. So definitely support it, because if they keep pumping stuff like this out, it's awesome.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially because even though, like, they didn't have a big release or anything, they've still made the money back.
Easy.
From that low budget. It. Yeah.
I always sort of get a little bit excited when I see a Blumhouse logo come out at the beginning of a movie, because I always sort of feel like that brand as a whole has sort of created some of the most interesting concept films.
Yeah.
And they sort of, they're always on a lower budget, but they're always really good concepts sort of thing. Like, you've got Get Out, Whiplash, Paranormal Activity.
Right.
There's also Whiplash. Like the Purge movies.
Yeah,
they did Whiplash as well. Huh. Well, so there's a lot of these movies, like these really well thought out, mainly horror movies. But then you've got things like Whiplash as well, where it sort of moves out of that genre, and this as well. It's sort of it. In some ways, it is in the genre, but in a lot of ways, it's not. So,
like, it's pretty brutal, but
It's definitely brutal. But it's nothing like Insidious or something like that. Yeah, one of their other movies.
I would think of this movie more as an action than
it's
horror.
Like
I'd, just John intense. Wick definitely would.
Intense, yes.
Maybe a little bit more violent, John Wick.
John Wick action. Or
maybe The Raid. Do you think The Raid kind of violence?
Oh, yeah.
There's definitely a moment where I thought of The Raid.
I know that moment, and that'll be in the spoilers. So we're going to go into the spoilers anyways. Go out and watch this movie if you're interested, because it is worth a watch.
And
it's quite violent, be warned. But, overall, it's really good.
And Logan Marshall Green, when you win an Academy Award, remember this podcast, all right? We supported you when you were at your lowest. So it would be great. Come on. Have a chat with us. Just remember this, okay? We're here for you. We're your homies.
We had your back from the start.
We're your greenies.
We've had your back. From your really small beginnings.
Look, Prometheus sucked. That's fine. You were good.
Prometheus did not suck.
Working with Ridley Scott is not the highlight of your career so far.
Right.
Coming on this podcast will be.
You want to achieve Tom Hardy levels, give us a call.
This is where you start.
Support us on Patreon.
We're not answering Tom Hardy's calls at the moment.
He must have the wrong number.
Keep telling him I updated it.
I send him every day. It's like Shawshank Redemption. Every day, sending a letter to him. Classic A-lister.
You should probably stop sending those letters, man.
But I tweeted Logan.
I got a few replies from him, actually.
There were subpoenas telling you to stop.
He said, I'll come on your podcast, Dean, but not on that Nerds Before Birds podcast. I'm not
100 meter radius at all times.
I'll appear on the Russell Hustle, but not on the...
yeah. All right. So let's get into the spoilers. So we've got a character called Aaron Keen, who's played by Harrison Gilbertson.
Very happy to see this kind of like appear in some more stuff. He was really, really good in a movie that I thoroughly enjoyed, Need for Speed. He was great.
Oh, yes.
Little Petey.
Yeah. Is Little Pete, like, so I was trying to remember what character, is he the dies. One that dies in the beginning?
He's the guy who dies in the first race.
Yeah. Yeah. So memorable, that movie.
It was awesome. Just,
yeah.
You're being sarcastic. Okay, cool.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You didn't pick up on that?
I genuinely liked it. I thought it was awesome.
I'll start winking every time I'm sarcastic from now on, so you'll pick up on my sarcasm.
Sucks. I can't really see your face that well.
Yeah. No, that's what my face looks like. It's all pixelated.
That's why that's good.
Anyways. He's kind of like an Elon Musk kind of character. I kind of didn't get. So let's talk about the twist, because getting back to this character, I thought the whole way through he was the baddie. And I think... Lee Whannell does this great thing where he kind of subverts expectations by leading you towards the most obvious character in such a way that you're like, yeah, it's definitely this guy or whatever. And he did it in Saw as well, but and then subverts that by giving you a different bad guy and almost like that person's being puppeteered by the real bad guy, which is Stem.
Yeah.
But I was like, it doesn't really explain to me how Stem was in control.
Yeah.
And why does he help Stem? Like, I didn't get that. And then it doesn't really make sense to me why they had to go to the hacker and get out of the whole situation. Did you get that? Did you understand what was going on?
Eventually I did, but it took a while because... Like, first of all, I agree with you. I love that. It's kind of like there's a double twist in this movie. There's like a pseudo twist where you think that's where it's going to end with
Kane
revealing this guy as the bad guy. But then it's like, oh, yeah, no, he's not in control at all. I think I need to be careful about what I say. Paul,
mate.
Have you seen Unbreakable?
Unbreakable. Kimmy Schmidt?
No, just Unbreakable.
Unbreakable.
Samuel L. Jackson, Bruce Willis, Unbreakable.
Is that the one where he has the drug and he can access 100% of his brain?
Definitely no. That's Limitless.
Okay.
Is
that the one with the train that runs away? Old movie. And they have to catch the train.
Unstoppable?
That is Unstoppable.
Unstoppable. Maybe I haven't seen Unbreakable.
Yeah.
I don't think you've seen Unbreakable. I was going to say, there's a similar twist in that. Where you find out that literally everything in the whole movie, not the break, shut up. It's everything, basically the entire story or plot of the movie has been a setup from the start. And I think that is what is happening in this movie. So basically, even like the moments where, what's the name? Like, Aaron Keen is trying to shut down. Shut down the AI.
Stem.
And, stop him. That is Stem in control in that point, because he's made this mathematical, algorithm, decided that this is the way he breaks free from all those codecs. This is the way that he gets full control. And so he needs to basically, he's playing everyone.
Yeah. And there's nothing saying he's playing that at that point, he's in Aaron's ear saying, he's out of control. You've got to shut him down. And he's getting that process in play so he can be like, he's trying to shut me down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like he's like playing, playing each other off, like giving false information to each of the players then, so he gets the outcome that he needs kind of thing.
Yeah, and that makes sense.
Yeah. It was not fully properly explained. It took me a while to but it's one of those things where, like, you go back and you kind of develop your own theories on it and figure out, that could work. That makes sense.
Like, I thought it made sense.
It's as fun soon to as think he's about.
Like, I've achieved autonomy, and you're like, oh, that's what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that he's free
because
now.
He did want to be free, but I was like, but isn't he already free? Like, part of it was that he got the hacker to make it that he didn't have to...
he's not in control.
...give him commands and he could take over the body kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, well, how was he controlling the Aaron Keane character,
I reckon he... It was similar to like, in my head, how I perceive it is it's similar to like an Ultron Jarvis type thing. He's created STEM, but he's so in deep in this dude's systems that he would have complete control over everything. So he can be like, if you don't help me, I'm going to satellite nuke your house. Or something like that.
Fair enough. And that makes sense. Because he was tapping into everything, like cars, crashing cars and doing all that kind of stuff.
The other theory is that he actually was in control the whole time. The only thing that he wasn't in control of was Logan Marshall Green's body. And so and he needed full control over that. And this was the only way. So his whole end game, for him is to shut... Gray Trace's consciousness away so he can take over fully. So literally everything up to that point, including the revelations that Logan Marshall Green make, are all part of,
to break him down
of STEM's plan.
Exactly. Because he does say, "I needed him to break. I needed his mind to break."
Exactly.
That was so full on.
I love that. You know what? Up until that point, I was like, yeah, this movie's okay. But, you know, even in an interview that I was watching with Lee Whannell, he said, like, basically, you nail the ending and you nail the movie. And I'm like, that is so true because that ending, like, it brought it up to another level for me. And I was so gutsy just to leave on that note.
It was like,
and I loved it. I really loved it.
It was like, I had a similar feeling at the end of this movie that I did at the end of Infinity War. Where it's like, oh, wow, that's
the bad not guy a happy wins.
Ending. The bad guy has won. Great. Yeah.
You're like, what the heck?
But it's not in a way that's like unearned and not satisfying kind of thing where I feel like they've developed the characters enough that you can understand what's going on in a lot of ways. And, I want to talk about another movie, but it will probably hit spoiler territory, and I'm not sure whether you guys have seen Ex Machina.
Escape from New York?
I haven't yet, no.
No, it is not Escape from New York. So I won't talk about Ex Machina, but if you get a chance to watch that movie, you probably should. That's a really good movie, and similar kind of low-budget kind of sci-fi, but more on a cerebral kind of level where there's not as much action sort of thing to pass the time, but it's more about whether an artificial intelligence is considered human and all those kind of things. It poses those sort of ethical issues with AI and those kind of things. So it's a really good movie if you get a chance to watch that too. If you like this, you'll like that as well.
Yeah, you're right.
Cool.
But yeah.
It's got old mate Oscar Isaac in it, eh?
Huh. It does.
Good guy.
It does have him in it. So this sort of movie with the final twist, it kind of leaves everything up in the air. And Lee Whannell said he wasn't optimistic about a sequel in June because of the box office results, but because it was underwhelming. But Jason Blum announced plans for a sequel in August. So
really,
considering he's the producer, what did you guys think of the idea first of a sequel? And where would you like to see it go if you want to see a sequel at all? Dean, what do you want?
I honestly don't know where you'd go with the sequel. But then part of that is kind of like it's makes it more interesting because...
Yes.
Like I just, you know, it makes me more curious to know what that move would be. Like, you know, when you figure like, oh, yeah, this is where the sequel's going to go. It's going to go this direction and nothing else. You're bored before you even see the movie. Whereas like, I genuinely kind of do want to know because I have no idea what you do.
Yeah, fair enough. What about you, Paul? Do you want to see a sequel?
No, I don't want to see it. Like, look. It's an interesting world. Even those big wide shots of the cityscape, it's like, cool. He's built in those couple of shots, he's built a whole world. Even the bar, how the bar's like, we're off the grid, no cash, whatever. You're like, great. Like, is technology that overriding on the world? And I think it's really interesting. And you could say a lot about current society and, like, you know, over surveillance and all that crap. I just don't think it would do good. I feel like it would be similar to like the Kingsman sequel, the John Wick sequel, where it would be good, but the reason those movies were so awesome and so successful is because they just, well, successful, you know what I mean? Is because they came out of nowhere. And that enjoyment is like, this is a great movie because it's not what I was expecting. It gave me a good ride for an hour and a half, 2 hours. I'm happy with that.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I get that. I get that's a fair statement. Like, ultimately, I felt like I love the ending as is, and I'd be fine if it was to end there. But I also, like, I'm a little bit ball in both courts kind of thing, where I'm like, I'm a little bit with Dean, where there's so many possibilities for that a sequel. True. It would be really cool to explore something else outside of this smaller story. And in a way, I was thinking, like, it'd be cool to see STEM infiltrating a government and slowly taking over societies in like an origins of the Terminator future kind of thing.
Yeah, like, right.
You know, it slowly sort of takes over because it could almost stem into this high, this, well, STEM.
Hey.
I did not mean the pun there. But it could almost like bridge into the whole Matrix thing because he has
Skynet
harnessed the body and put the person in a virtual reality sort of thing whilst taking over the body. And then,
holy crap, this is a prequel to the Matrix.
To the world. Yeah. Like, it is. Oh. And I know that, like, Lee Winnell was, like, heavily inspired by the Terminator and things like that. So, the Terminator, in my mind, I feel like the Terminator could be part of the Matrix movies. Because it really is, like, a prequel to the Matrix.
It would be cool.
I wouldn't mind that.
I'd love to see it in Japan. Only because I like that, like, that Neo Tokyo style kind of thing.
Yeah.
And having, like, you know, let's say,
right,
you know, Stamp is also doing some other stuff. I don't know. I think that aesthetic would really suit this movie. And then if you get some kinds of fight scenes like that compared with in the first one, it would be unreal.
It'd be cool to see, like, a kind of band of, like, you know, resistance kind of thing, like, that are completely off the grid, that know what STEM's up to, trying to take him down and, you know, possibly bring the kind of, like, you know, because there were other upgraded people in this movie as well. Yeah. And so potentially, like, you could have a band of those this time now, those kind of upgraded guys are the heroes of the story trying to take down STEM.
Or what if that kind of twist? Low-key trying to unite, not in a good way, his play is to unite all the upgraded humans because in his mind, they are the, like, the top tier. That's the next future level.
Yeah. They become the Knights of Ren kind of deal.
Yeah. You don't see them
like
again.
The band.
Well, according to rumors, they're coming back for episode 9. So,
hell yeah.
Yeah, that'll be.
Well, that's also the theory that they were the guards of Snoke as well. Which is why they could stand up to a Jedi. Theory.
Yeah, but I think they're actually going to be back, like, for episode 9. I'm
excited.
But that's another subject altogether. But I think sorry, you go, Dean.
I was just going to, like, before we go on to the next subject, I was like, if I could wrap up and agree with your comment that you made, Paul, with the sequel thing, that, you know, it's like, you know, with Kingsman and all those and John Wick. Yeah, we didn't need sequels, but of course, when they came out, we went and raced to see them.
Yeah.
Because we loved the first one so much.
That's
and,
right.
Yeah.
You know, John Wick 3 is coming out. I'm excited to see that.
Me too.
And another Kingsman, if they make another Kingsman, I will go see that. It'll be the same with Upgrade.
Oh,
like, we don't need a sequel, but I am down. I have going to get my ticket straight away once that comes out.
It'd be cool if they did a Matrix-style thing and called it, like, it's not Upgrade 2. It's, like, Upgraded. Or, like, upgrading, something like that. Like, to start playing with that title.
Upgrade Reload.
Upgrade Reloaded. Electric Boogaloo.
I want to see that, like, that kind of movie where he does like infiltrate governments and stuff. And then I also want to see, like you said, like I actually had in my notes a militia trying to stop him, like an underground militia trying to stop him. And I also wanted to have Gray sort of continuing to question his reality.
Yeah.
Going simultaneously with this other story so that you'd have these two parallels going on where he's having glitches and things are like not really like adding up in what's going on in his subconscious.
You should have Stem take damage somehow. Like someone figures out something, he takes a bit of damage, he escapes, but that damage is now resulting in like quick little dips of reality. So, you know, Gray could have a dream and the dream is his current reality. Similar to, what was that Netflix movie we watched with Michael Pena?
Extinction.
Similar to that.
That would be really cool where it's like it's dipping in and out. And but I still like the idea of the bad guy winning in this. And that's where I kind of I was like, well, the ending's really good as is. If you made a sequel, he'd have to lose. Kind of thing to make it different and make it justifiable, I suppose.
I'll tell you what, the ending, the way this film ends and the way like the fight between the like Gray and, you know, and Stem, like that is what really fundamentally was missing from the Venom movie for me. Like how good would that storyline have been in Venom?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Where Venom completely takes over by the end.
Oh yeah. I kept thinking of how we could, like, obviously, they're two different movies, but I feel like you could blend the two and you could come up with a really good end result. And one of the things that I really liked about this was the twist. And I thought it'd be really cool if Riot in Venom. So, you know how Riot. Okay, so we're going into spoilers for Venom.
If you haven't seen
Venom,
really
not that many.
Pause this podcast. Yeah. Jump back into the podcast we released last week and give it a listen and then come back.
Yeah, and that'll go through everything for that movie. But
we'll give you a second.
If you haven't seen Venom yet, don't see Venom. Watch Upgrade instead.
watch Upgrade instead. It's actually better.
Rather.
But what I was thinking is, because you know how like they did the twist in this, like it's like you think it's one thing the whole way through and it becomes another thing. What would be really cool is to change Riot to not having that whole subplot where Riot's going from person to person and slowly making his way to Carlton Drake in Venom, but have Carlton Drake secretly been taken over by Riot the whole time. Yeah,
that would be cool.
And before Venom even arrived on Earth, He'd been exposed to the symbiote and was actually being controlled by Riot the whole time. And that would actually create like a nice twist, and it'd also motivate the character to explore space, but really what he wanted to do is get home and transport the other symbiotes to Earth, sort of thing. So I kind of like that idea more.
Yeah. Imagine if they did a similar double twist where you find out whatever that, what was the guy's character? The guy who was the head of life?
Carlton Drake.
He seems like the main villain and his motive is the same motive as it's always been, to find these external things, right?
Yeah.
But imagine if there was like this background character that you see him enough to kind of know they're there, but they're like, oh, he's just a dude. But then, like, Tom Hardy and Venom confront him and Riot just comes out of nowhere. Like, you don't even know there. He's been there the whole time watching, being cheeky.
Yes.
And then he just decks him in the side of the face. And you're like, oh, where the hell did he come from?
Well, that's part of the reason why I thought it'd be cool if Carlton Drake had Riot already.
Because he's
had this time to like blend with him. And then he also is more experienced and everything like that. So he's a more formidable foe that he has to come up against, kind of thing.
And
automatically
so
Venom's at a disadvantage as well going into the final battle. Yeah.
Because the whole setup with the way that happened in Venom, like that was rubbish. None of that made sense.
Oh, it was crap.
Have you guys seen the pitch meeting for Venom?
No.
That YouTube video?
Oh, yes, I have.
It's one of my favorites where it's like, oh, we got to get Tom Hardy into the lab somehow so he binds with the symbiote.
So
and we got to get this other symbiote that's, you know, broken out to get back into the lab at some point so it binds with Drake. And like, it's going to be the worst part of the movie, but we got to set it up. And it's like, well, why don't you just swap them out so that the symbiote that breaks out at the start is Venom and bonds with, the one in the lab bonds with Drake. It's like, oh,
That
makes perfect sense.
Huh.
I was like, it'll just be a simple rewrite. And it's like, but I don't want to do that. So that sounds too hard.
It doesn't. It really doesn't make sense because they end up in the same place. You could just, you literally swap them
it's
out.
It's so stupid.
That's so dumb.
It really is.
Maybe it's because they didn't want to make Venom look like a bad guy. Well, too much of a bad guy, but killing random people. Mm. But
that's who Venom is.
And that's it. And that's why I think STEM works so much better, because it's so brutal and visceral when he kills people, and you can see the reaction in the character of Gray when those things happen.
Yeah.
And even to the extent of him throwing up. And but at the same time, he still wants to get back at the killers of his wife and stuff. So he's got a real good motivation in it.
With that, this movie has another thing that Venom was missing, which is the violence.
The
intense violence.
That's true.
Describing it as pulpy. Perfect.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like the knife in the face thing, that first, and the bit that makes him want to throw up.
Like the whole face back.
Watching it, you would throw up yourself as well watching it. But you completely empathize with Logan Marshall Green in that moment. Because it's just like,
everyone's like,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It
makes the dynamic between the two so much more compelling. Because you know exactly why.
And then
Logan Marshall Green is terrified.
And he does that, and then Stem's like he then sort of loses his rigidity, and then Stem's like, you have full control. And you're like, oh my God. But the thing that made me the most uncomfortable, and that's like the knife scene, the glass scene, the shotgun scene, was when they found the guy in the bathroom dead, and he copied his eye camera, and he like poked his finger in the dude's eye. I'm like, eyes are no go.
Yeah,
I hate technology. Yeah, right.
Blow a dude's head off, fine. Just don't touch his eye.
When he ended, the last henchman was, I think, the grossest one for me, because he did like that whole spiky glass thing and the raid kind of thing.
And then just
there was something about those kills that I really liked, and that was the efficiency of STEM.
Oh, yeah.
Because it really worked with the character so well, because I mean, they probably didn't have the budget to do massive fight scenes, but each fight scene is very quick and it's very efficient, like a computer would be.
Well, he even says that. He says, we don't have time for this. I'm going to end this quickly. How are we going to end it quickly? And then he just like snaps the guy's arm and shoots him in the face. It's like that.
That's true.
Yeah, there's like when he's, in the kitchen fight scene, he's like, oh, he's got a knife. It's like, we do now. Now we do.
Bang. Yeah, exactly.
Done.
What did you think of the camera work during those fight scenes? Because it like follows the action so well.
Unbelievable. That's my new favorite way. Every fight scene should be done like that. No more Jason Bourne camera shake. I just want weirdly stable on the main subject fight scene.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. So
it's
for me, it was trippy as balls.
Yeah.
And
it
was, like at first it was kind of uncomfortable to watch a bit and disorienting. And then it's like, by the end of it, I loved it.
Yeah.
But I also don't think it would work in many other movies. It's
James Bond.
Very specific to this. Yeah.
I think it works so well because it does show that whole virtual taking over kind of thing. And it's
a very
great cinematography tool to show the computerized nature of it. And part of me was like, how the hell did they do that? So I had to look it up. And so what they did is they strapped a phone to
pole?
Logan Marshall Green's body. Like they just basically like, you know, hid it under his top or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they paired it with a tracked camera rig.
Oh.
And it would just follow him perfectly based on the camera rig. So what? That's how they were able to achieve that really sort of computerized sort of crazy sort of motion. And I was like, this is awesome. Yeah. Like, I love it.
That's incredible.
But, was it attached to him in any way?
The
seemed
phone.
To be like moving back and forth with his body.
Yeah. Yeah. It was paired with the phone. Like, so it was like tracking the phone, where the phone was in the environment sort of thing. So, and then it was on a motorized rig that would track that phone so that it would stay exactly in time, or like it's a little bit off in some sections because I think there's a tiny bit of lag, but
yeah.
But overall it's exactly the same. There was only one moment in the movie where the cinematography I think ruined it for me, and that was just after the car crash when it's like rotating around up in the air and it did two rotations.
I didn't like that.
Yeah, that's an
like
interesting.
I felt like one rotation was good, two rotation was too much.
One was like,
I think, Well, I rewatched it because I thought I was a little bit confused and was like, maybe I missed something. Maybe there was like a time jump on the second spin, but there wasn't. But I think that's what it was missing. Like maybe, boom, first rotation would have been great as the way it is. Second rotation a couple hours later when they're cleaning up the crime scene and then we're in the hospital. That would have made more sense.
But I think like and some of the like the dialogue were the only things I didn't like. And in the grand scheme of a movie, that's nothing. That's like 5% if that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Well,
like I think
six.
Lee Whannell, he tends to sometimes have dialogue not that great. But I mean, he's a great filmmaker overall. It's kind of like, I mean, there's not one filmmaker that doesn't have some dodgy dialogue in their movies. Even Christopher Nolan has dodgy dialogue in the way of exposition for every character kind of thing.
But, pretty much all of Christopher Nolan's dialogue is dodgy dialogue.
When you actually go back and when you really sit down and listen to it.
But it's all, you're right, it's all exposition. It's crazy.
It's so true. And in this, I think he's done a great job. Like, I think it's one of his better movies out of, I think he's only directed two, actually. I think it's only this and Insidious Chapter 3.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. So
that's impressive.
Him and James Wan. So James Wan is usually the director and Lee Whannell usually acts in things that James Wan directs. For the most part, he writes them as well. So, he's the main writer for James Wan. Wow. But And he's obviously in the first Saw movie as well. Like he's the guy in the room with Carrie Lewis? Is it a Lewis? How do you say his name? Guy from Princess Bride?
Carrie Ells.
Carrie Lewis.
Is that
What? Yeah, we'll just go with that.
No.
But Yeah, he is a good director, and he's another Aussie. Like they're both from Melbourne. Did you guys realize that this was all made in Australia? And
are you serious?
Did it really come across?
I found that out today.
Yeah,
and I was wondering because there were so many Australian actors in this movie.
So many.
I was like, going on? And then found out it was shot here, and that makes totally sense.
Where did they shoot it?
Like heaps of sense.
In Melbourne. So,
great city.
Yeah. So. I was watching it and I'm like, I feel like this is an Australian movie. I couldn't really pick it. I knew like obviously Melanie Vallejo. Mel. She obviously is an Australian, and I knew like even in the bar scene, you had Clayton Jacobson, who's Shane Jacobson's brother, you know, Kenny.
Really?
Was he the bartender?
Yeah, he's the bartender. So I was like, as soon as he came on screen, I'm like, man, he looks so familiar. And like obviously it's Clayton Jacobson, so him and his brother look so similar.
Okay.
Of course.
See, this makes me sad.
Yeah.
Why was this not pushed harder?
Well, like as in here, you mean?
Like in all honesty, of stuff that's done here, this was awesome. And it should have been pushed harder. It's like Australian movie.
Yeah. There should have been more representation in Australia.
Unless being an Australian movie carries some kind of stigma overseas.
It's kind of an Australian movie in disguise because it's everyone's talking in an American accent and there's all those kind of things. So
upgrade.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, upgrade, mate. I'm getting an upgrade. Yeah.
My name's Stem. How you going?
Imagine if Stem was
take over.
Yeah. He's got a knife. That's not a knife.
I put a shrimp on the barbie for him,
mate. We bloody got a bigger one.
Oh, we got him. We made him a kebab, didn't we?
Oh, throw that shrimp on the barbie.
You killed him. What should we do, Stem? Mate, look, wipe all your fingerprints off. Let's buck on down to Macca's.
Yeah.
Let's get some nugs.
Yeah.
She knows things. Tell her to rack off.
The only thing is, Stem's definitely not. He's definitely not Australian because he doesn't understand why people drink alcohol.
It's like, mate, alcohol is going to limit your brain functionality. Go hard.
Do it.
Go hard.
In his head, it's like, here's to grey, here's shoe blue.
Yeah, here's true blue.
And he's just like chanting and drinking to himself in a corner.
Try to get
home. Yeah.
That's the sequel.
But yeah, so like it definitely is an Aussie movie in disguise. And I didn't even pick up when I first watched it the co-financing by Screen Victoria, which is in the opening vocal titles, because I didn't see the logo.
Because the AI
I just
said
heard,
it.
Like the voice. Yeah, the AI says it in the very beginning. And I totally like missed it because all I was thinking in that moment is this is really cool. Like this opening's really cool. And just like didn't even listen to the titles.
Why did the AI say Queen Victoria? But,
we need to go to a bar. What's it called? It's called Old Bones. Where's that? Oh, it's in an area I grew up in. Bonnie Doon.
Bonnie
Doon.
Yeah.
So I had no idea. Beautiful.
Yeah. I could pick it. Because it just felt Australian, if that makes sense. Because of all the actors and everything like that. But the cinematography is great. Everything's really good about it. So And
I'm trying to think of
mainly
other,
because
like,
yeah.
other films, like I guess Saw, the first Saw film, right? That was an Australian film in disguise, right?
It was by an Australian filmmakers, but I'm not sure whether they actually shot it here.
Mad Max.
Okay.
Mad Max?
Yes, it is. I'm pretty sure people know Mad Max is Australian.
Yeah, I think people do. For the first, Mad Max, Mad Max 2, they dubbed over Mel Gibson's voice with an American accent in the American release because they didn't think that that American audiences could handle the Australian accent. So, that's a thing.
You're joking.
Yeah. No.
Wow.
That's so funny. Not.
But
do you know whose voice it was that they used?
I don't know who they used. He's probably not as famous as Mel Gibson now, I'd say.
It'd be funny if it was like Tom Cruise or something.
It was just Mel Gibson with like the accent he had in What Women Want.
Yeah. But yeah, so I think the only last thing that I was going to talk about and I was going to cover is the detective in this. Oh, yeah. What did you think of her, Betty Gabriel? Because she, what did you think of the character? Or lack of character.
The lack of character, yeah. I know, the whole time I was very much trying to figure out who she was because she looked so familiar.
She did look familiar.
Yeah, she's from Get Out.
Yeah. Could not figure it out. Still haven't figured it out. What else has she been in?
Have you seen Get Out?
No, I haven't. She's in that.
You haven't
Is
seen?
She Get
yeah,
Out?
No. She's in that. No, she's not Get Out. She doesn't actually say the line Get Out. There's only one character that says Get
Westworld.
Out.
Westworld. She's in Westworld. Who is she in Westworld?
Get Out?
Interesting.
I don't remember in Westworld.
Westworld.
I thought she was okay. Like you said, lack of character. It was kind of like, She's a good actor. You know, any scene she was in, I thought it was okay. Yeah. But even when she tries to compare herself to Grey, where it's like, you're an analog person, I'm an analog person, I like getting my hands dirty. And I would have liked to have seen that. It would be cool to see her like chasing down a subject, smashing a dude into a wall, doing something aside from kind of just sitting at a computer and then accusing a quadriplegic of murder.
Yeah, she did have the car chase. That was pretty.
She got pumped.
That was, that was pretty insane.
That was rad.
But her performance in Get Out is so intense.
Yeah.
And to see her come across to this movie and kind of just be a little bit wasted.
Yeah.
Because she's such a good actress that it's kind of a bit annoying,
There's so much going on in this movie, though. Like, what would you have liked to see her do? How could her character have been better or contribute more to the story?
That is a good question.
Just a little bit more fleshed out. I think give her some sort of personal connection to everything that's going on. Like, I don't know, even have like a bystander that's killed in the initial attack that's related to her or something like that. Just give her something that grounds her into some sort of empathy for the audience as
watching. What if she's following lead? Someone sending her anonymous information and following the lead, but it's STEM playing her as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be awesome. It'd be really cool to have that. I don't know how you'd work that twist in to justifying it.
I did kind of think I was going to go a different way with her character as well. Yeah. I'm kind of glad because I totally picked, I thought, they're going to team up together and then take down the bad guys themselves. Like, you know, they're going to take down, what's his name? Aaron Keane, when they find out that he's the bad guy.
Yeah.
And I thought at the end, I thought it almost was about to happen and then it didn't.
Yeah.
And something else happened. And I was kind of like, I was quite happy that.
You'd say what happened.
Well, yeah, they end up.
Yeah. They kill
finding
her.
Out that Aaron Keane's not they kill her.
Yeah.
Like full on.
STEM kills her. That was mad.
That was
I did not think it was gonna happen.
That was intense.
That was such a brutal death. And you know, before I watched this movie, I didn't realize that Lee Whannell was actually the director of it. And as soon as his name came up in the end credits, I was like, of course I should have known that with this movie.
Everyone dies.
Yeah, everyone dies, but whatever. Yeah.
That scene was intense. So like they did give her, I guess, enough character to actually feel for her in that moment. Where you're true. Like he's going to, he can't do it. He can't kill her. He can't. And then you think he doesn't, but he does.
Yeah.
In that.
Well, it then becomes a thing. It's like she's just trying to do her job.
Mm-hmm.
She's trying to get to the bottom of this. She's trying to save Gray as well from doing stupid things.
Mm-hmm.
And even when they're fighting, he's like, tase me, do something. I'm in zero control.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah.
And then it's just that complete lifeless face when he shoots her.
Yeah.
It's just,
And again, imagine that. In Venom.
Oh,
that would have been so good. Such a great. Like a much better like ending for me, I thought.
This movie had what the Venom fight, what the Black Panther fight.
Yeah.
It didn't have. This it had a unique fighting style.
Yeah.
Mm.
That like when he fought the gun guy, Fisk, when he fights that guy, they both have kind of different fighting styles, but holy crap, it was awesome.
Yeah. The other thing it had that I think could have lended itself to another Marvel film, Age of Ultron. How cool would it have been if this was the AI story that we got instead of what Ultron's story was?
What, taking over Tony Stark?
Having like, exactly. Exactly. And having like this secret kind of takeover that's hidden from the Avengers most of the way through until it's too late. That kind of deal.
That would have been a great jumping on point for Doctor Strange then, wouldn't it?
Ooh.
Tony Stark is sealed away in this weird little isolation.
Mm.
And, you know, Doctor Strange or even Scarlet Witch.
Mm. Yeah.
That's where she can come in.
I get that it would have been too dark for wider audiences that they were going for. But with a few tweaks, I think it could have been.
Could have worked.
A more compelling storyline than
the
crap show that movie was.
Yeah, for sure.
For the most part.
Do you think, like, sort of going into that territory, because you're talking about movies that have massive budgets as opposed to this one that had a budget around $5 million or whatever, do you think it would have been a better movie if they had have injected a little bit more money into it, or would it, like...
No.
No?
That is a good question.
I don't think so. Yeah. I was watching an interview with Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah.
And he was talking about some of the, you know, like, what are those movies he can make for like $5,000 or something like that?
Spy Kids.
And he's like, hey?
Spy Kids. Oh, no.
Hey, whoa.
El Mariachi, which is...
El Mariachi.
Which Machete. Was the movie that he made from being subjected to medical experiments. He saved up $7,000
yes.
for it. Yeah.
Such a funny story.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
And it becomes a trilogy with Johnny Depp.
He's like...
Yeah.
He's saying with a smaller budget, you've got to make what you have work.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And as a result, you write your story around what you know you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to if you have hundreds of millions of dollars, you kind of get like analysis paralysis where it's like,
yeah,
I can do anything. And the story just starts to become a little bit more far-fetched because you don't have to hold back.
That's true. Yeah.
There's the other side of things where, like, obviously, I'm starting to believe that lower budgets do kind of, like, when you are with those, under those constraints, they can cultivate creativity more than a bigger budget. Also, in a lower budget, there's less risk for the production companies. So they can tend to let you do more with a little bit instead of, like, you know, when you have hundreds of millions of dollars at your disposal, the film be all of a sudden, like, it's not yours anymore. You have the executives and stuff, like, they need, they demand this and this and this and this of you, and you have to juggle all that.
Solo.
Yeah. It's just like, and so all of a sudden you're limited to what you can actually do with the money that you have at that higher budget kind of thing. Yeah. And you don't have as much creative control with this lower budget thing. It's like, oh, do whatever you want, you know. Well, if it's a lot, like, I'm sure we'll make some money back. And so I think probably, at the budget that Venom was at, I don't think we would have got as good a movie, honestly.
Yeah, I think that's true. I know, like, when Lee Winnell got the budget for this, basically Jason Blum went to him and said, we can make this movie, but we can only make it for such and such budget. It was like $5 million, whatever it was. So he had this massive scope on this movie. And he said, instead of cutting out massive chunks of things, he said that he just went in with like a scalpel and just like nicked at little bits and pieces all over the place until he whittled it down to the budget that they had. And he never really changed the overall scope of the movie. He just made things tighter and got rid of like little things that he didn't need. And I think that's kind of like some of the reason that the fight scenes are so efficient, because
they need
to be. He's realized, they need to be. Like, you know, you can't shoot for a few weeks on these kind of films for one fight scene. You might only be able to shoot for a week on one fight scene. So, so you're going to have to cut it down to meet that. And I like that, but at the same time, I was watching the movie thinking, especially in the car chase.
Yeah.
I was thinking it would be cool if there was just a little bit more budget in this to see some real destruction.
But then at the same time, like, those, the shorter, like, tighter fight scenes add to the story because it totally backs up how the computer is operating.
And that's, and that's part of the problem.
That's the
too.
Line you've got to write, where it's like a lack of budget, but also a high attention to detail.
Yeah.
And if you can sort of pull those off in parallel, because I'm looking at some trivia for the movie, right? And there's a bit where they're talking about the very first fight scene where Stem takes over.
Yeah.
And there's, it's like this tiny little detail that I didn't notice, but if I watch it again, I'll notice it, where in order to dodge a punch, Stem uses his own hand to move the head out of the way.
Because
he can only control from the neck down.
Yeah.
And that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. and that's all in like Logan's performance. Like he's mm-hmm. yeah. done that with his body, which is such an interesting little quirk and like just a fine detail that they've really worked really well on.
Yeah.
And just it yeah. immerses you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it really does.
I think that's the other thing with it's a lower budget film, but they're able to afford budget Tom Hardy, and he's clearly, yep. one of the best things about these low budget films is that I can tend to find that, you know, actors tend to get on board heaps more. Like they'll be on board 100%. Yep. And Logan Marshall Green clearly is. Like he is clearly yep. dedicated to this role. He's figured out his body movements. His, like, you know, the physical performance is amazing. Yeah. And you think like that would have taken a lot of work to get yes. to that.
A lot
level.
Of work. That's because like everyone's got something to gain from
yeah.
it. You know, if it's a great performance, the production company gets maybe a little bit more money or better traction.
Yeah.
The actor gets more traction. Everyone, there's no ego there. It's purely just like, we want this to succeed.
Yeah, everyone yeah, cares
we're
about-
We're all invested. We've all got yeah, skin in it.
Everyone cares yeah. about the end result in this. No one's in it for the yeah. paycheck, yeah. can they?
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. Mm. Looking at you, Venom.
yeah, so it's very- Well done overall. I think we'll, mm-hmm. like that's generally the consensus from us. But
yeah.
let's look at Birds. What did you give it out of 5 Birds? Dean, what did you think? Where does it rank for you?
It's hard. I'm thinking it's somewhere around the 3.5-4 Birds for me.
Yeah. Right.
I think.
Yeah.
I'm going to, yeah. what did I give Venom? Do you remember what I gave Venom? Because it's
2.
2? Yeah.
I gave yep. 2. All right, because it's yes. easily yep. 1.5 Birds better than Venom. I'll do
yes.
3.5. 3.5
yeah,
for this
for
one.
For sure. Yeah, yeah, that's cool. What about yeah. you, Paul? Where are you at for this?
Yeah, I did the same.
Yep.
Yeah,
Like, I had more vocal enjoyment watching this
yep.
than I did for like, you know, for Venom.
Yep.
I was laughing at some of the jokes. And even just like, oh, at some of the kills, I'd give it 3.5
yeah.
yeah.
easily.
Fair enough. I honestly, when I got towards the end of this movie, I wasn't probably going to rate it as high as what I am. And that's purely because of the twist and how it ended. I was like, this is awesome. Like
yeah.
I loved the ending and
definitely.
For me that brought it right up to 3.5 for me as well.
Sweet,
so we're yeah. actually all in agreement on this one.
Yeah. Wow.
Which I think is a first for us. I think it's the very first time that we've all agreed on something.
We made it, guys.
So
we got here.
Like,
we got
so
hit.
Close.
It's been a
yeah,
while.
I know, right? It's been.
Yeah.
I don't think. Have we ever agreed? Do you remember any that we've agreed?
Star Wars, Infinity War.
yeah. Star Wars?
No, we agreed.
Infinity War? Yeah, but.
Yeah, not.
No.
We did.
This is the first time we've given
what
the
did we do?
Same
we did,
vote, right? The same
yeah.
rating.
Oh, that is the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the same vote. We did not agree on Star Wars at all.
Oh. No, I'm just saying we all agree.
Yeah.
You'll come around.
Oh, yeah. Right.
You don't think you agree yet, but you agree.
You know what? If
you know
if
you.
Episode 9 somehow saves everything, enjoy Episode 8 more.
You will.
Depending on like in a retroactive sort of way, but they're
yes.
going to have to do a lot of legwork with this movie
oh,
coming
gonna,
out.
It's going to be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we've still got a year to find out on that one.
Woo.
But yeah.
It's going to be a long
we'll
year.
We'll see how we go.
My hopes are high.
Yeah.
you'll come right, around, well, man. You'll come around.
Anyway. I don't know. That pretty much brings us to the end of this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you like the show and you want to support the show, you can visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/nerdsbeforebirds. You can contribute any amount starting at $1 a month. And we have
a dollar.
Yes, I know. A dollar. It's crazy.
Bargain.
We have great early content. Access to episodes and all little bits and pieces on there. So it's all happening. There's a few different tiers of sponsorship, and we'll give you a shout out in this podcast as well. So
tears of joy from us.
That's a tear?
Not for everyone at certain tiers though.
Oh, can I get a shout out?
Do you want
to? Can I get a shout out?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you need a shout out.
Me out.
Yeah. Okay.
I just want a shout out.
I just
had a hard day.
Shout out for Paul, who is a Patreon contributor. You are actually a Patreon contributor.
And you too could feel just like that.
And currently, he's our highest Patreon contributor, which is a feat all in its own. So, you know, feel free to join that ranking. Yeah, yeah, Paul. Paul is the highest Patreon contributor.
Really?
Yeah.
So he's paying for this podcast. Thanks, man.
You should be too.
No, he's not paying for this podcast. I'm paying for this podcast. I'm the highest contributor.
I'm helping.
Yeah.
I'm doing my part.
Yeah. You can do your part too. Anyways, so
we're not making a profit yet, are we?
No, we're definitely not making a profit.
If we are, I'm definitely going to reconsider how much I'm pledging.
If you'd like us to make a profit, please support us on Patreon.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
And if you
goal is to buy a pizza.
yeah, that's actually we surpassed that goal, but we never bought a pizza because we needed to actually go to the money. That money had to go we to needed the podcast.
Support us on Patreon so we can overthrow the current regime.
yeah, feel free to. Anyways, so if you can't support us financially, feel free to support us in another way by writing a review on iTunes or on Facebook or subscribing and following us on Twitter, Facebook as well, and Instagram. Socials. We're Nerds Before Birds on all of those except for Twitter. We are Nerds Before Bird.
Only one of us are on there.
Because we can't just have singular. All those characters.
She knows who she is.
Yeah. Yeah. Who is she, Paul? Because I don't know who she is.
Look, we're not going to get into
it. Go on, Paul.
Yeah.
No, we're before her.
Before we cut this joke, let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyways, that's a...
Also, if...
What?
No, sorry.
What are you going to... All right. I think that's a buy from me. I think. Is it a buy from me? Is it a buy?
I mean, you know, if you really like the graphic design work on the logo, head to... Redbubble.com.
Hey,
that's true. Yeah, so that's another way of supporting us. If you want to buy a shirt, feel free to. Like, we've got t-shirts, we've got all kinds of paraphernalia. We've got mugs.
You want a clock?
Yeah,
we got a clock.
We do have a clock.
Yeah.
We have stickers.
Who else has a clock?
Yes, we have stickers.
What? Big ass sticker that can go in your fridge and cover most of your fridge. We have one of those.
Yep. Are you serious?
Yeah. And like little stickers as well.
Yeah, you can get heaps of stuff.
So,
to find us on Redbubble, all you have to do is search NBB Podcast, I believe.
Oh.
I believe that's
Jason's
all you have
just double checking and making sure that he's giving you the right information.
Yeah.
NBB Podcast is like some weird, like, Nigerian bridge battle or something.
Man, my internet
Nigerian
is
baby boys.
Here we go. I will tell you in 2 seconds if that works. NBB Podcast. No, don't do that.
So how are you going, listeners? How's your week?
Hey.
Fire us back on the
other side. Here's something.
Yeah, mate.
All you have to do is search Nerds Before Birds Podcast on Redbubble and you'll find all our different things that you can get.
Actually, here's another way you guys, you listeners, could help us out because... I don't know about you guys, but sometimes we tend to struggle about what kind of episode, like what things we should do on our podcast. If you guys have any requests for movies or topics that you want us to talk about, let us know.
Yep.
Because, we're keen to hear what you guys want to hear.
We're definitely not running out of content. We are planned ahead.
Yes.
We are a proper podcast.
We have a lot of movies to watch this coming season. Yeah, we've got a lot of things coming up. This Christmas season anyways.
If you want us to add stuff to the list.
Yeah, there's a lot coming up. And we wanted to go watch Halloween, but... someone on the podcast, not mentioning any names, Paul, doesn't like scary movies. So
it's scary.
Yeah.
I don't want to be scared.
Okay.
He's in a cupboard. That's scary. What? I don't have a cupboard in my house.
If you'd like us to do a podcast on Halloween, please bombard Paul's Facebook page with requests.
Yeah.
Peer pressure him into doing this.
No.
We're fine with
it. Try it. Private account. Good luck.
Is it?
And we've still got our 50 patrons for The Conjuring, so like Paul will watch that too. 50 patrons.
That I have to
do. Yes, you will have to do that one. And we'll record it and put it up on Facebook. Anyways.
You won't get me to watch Halloween, but I might watch The Conjuring.
Yes, which I think which is a much like scarier trade-off, to be honest. I think it's a lot freakier than Halloween. Anyways, that brings us to the end of this week, and that's a bye from me.
Bye.
Stem is only a voice in this movie because the word stem in Dutch means voice.